All right, so this is the generic, I'm sorry, the generic trigger warning for certain of my appellate corpus juris podcasts where I talk about procedure. And chances are, if I put this trigger warning in the episode, it's because I'm talking about a particular state that is peculiar, right? So let me backtrack, right? So from Houston, Texas, born and raised, it's pronounced H-E-B, not Heb. Whataburger is great. Bleed Orange, Go Horns, Giga Maggies. I know that's I just perjured myself because I said Giga Maggies and Go Horns, but you get the general idea, right? Card-carrying Democrat, and I think the last time that it snowed here in Texas when I was here was when I was 10, and it snowed once, right? And it was like a combination between like snow and sleet, right? Went to college out in California. I think the last time it snowed on the campus there was 1962, right? So 22 years of continuous sun, so to speak, right? So it's 70 degrees in the wintertime, sunny in 75, as they say. And if you're like me and you like warm weather, and you're a card-carrying Democrat, then your hotspots, you're basically looking at a California, a New Mexico, or Hawaii, right? That's where you're at home. And then we have a bunch of other states, right, that are in between on the spectrum, right? So a bunch of states, great up north, folks wouldn't vote for a Republican to save their lives. But it's cold. It's cold. And you're in a bad spot when it's 1 degree outside and you turn on. I'm sorry. You're in a bad spot when you turn on the Jets game and it's Jets 3, Giants 10, but it's 1 degree outside, right? And then you go down south, right? Great weather, great folks, great parties. The beaches are great. The sand is great, and what have you. But there are a bunch of Republicans from the top down. It's the solid South for a reason, right? And in Texas, it's probably not going to change, right? They say it might change by 2040, but most folks get the gist right there. And there's been a general collective decision. That at least as far as the energy economy is concerned, that any environmental concerns will just be thrown to the wayside. We're going to sacrifice the welfare of the beaches to have a robust energy sector. Florida, not so much, right? Which is the other big, great state down south. And I'm really frustrated when I think about Florida because the economy is essentially premised on tourism and agriculture, and there's not much to be said. For policies that that entail high tariffs and almost purposeful environmental degradation, right? So why is Florida red, right? If the economy is premised on the existence of low tariffs so you can get your crop out to international markets and you need the beaches to be in good shape, and the result of all that is that you need good environmental protections. When, well, why not just go blue? But that's me digressing. Why should you be interested in this peculiar state that I've set out for you today? Whether it's Montana or Alaska or Arkansas or some other peculiar state. Well, a couple of reasons, right? So it used to be that back in the day you settled down in a state. Maybe it was 1960 or 1980 or pre-2000, whatever. And you took the bar exam and you were admitted to that state, and maybe you were admitted in the state that was contiguous with it, or if you lived in the tri-state area, you were admitted in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut, right? But fortunately, the MBE has changed all that, right? So now you can take the bar exam and you can be admitted to 10, 20, 30, 40, 40 states, upwards of 40 states, right? Why is that significant as it pertains to this? Well, some people would say that just by virtue of taking the MBE and being admitted to the state that I'm talking about in this seceding podcast, that you would be conspicuous, right? So on a rank of 1 to 10, most folks are admitted to one state. 2 or 3 is on the high side, but 10, 20, 30, 40, that is not normal, right? That's like a 10,000 on a rank of 1 to 10. And you'd be conspicuous. And perhaps for that reason alone, folks would be interested in the procedure as it relates to the state that I'm talking about now. Another reason to be interested in the podcast. Well, let's say that you work for a firm, right? And I highly doubt that most firms are going to turn around someone admitted to 10, 20, 30, much less 40 states, right? Or whether they could legally do it, regardless of whether or not you were a Caucasian male or African American female or anyone in between, right? It helps your firm out because now firms, they get called to do peculiar things, right? So these Tony Law firms in New York and in D.C., right, they have a bunch of staff. And sometimes they get called to do peculiar things in Alaska or Montana, right? And they have to get outside counsel to go to these states, right? And if you're admitted to that state, well, that's just one less person that they have to pay, right? So good for the firm. And more than that, you can bring in any business that can be had from these states, so you can become a rainmaker of sorts, so to speak. So that's one reason. Another reason is that it allows you to remain, at least this bar membership scheme that I'm setting out allows you to remain active in the appellate scene, even if you didn't clerk, right? So let's say that maybe you screwed up in your first year, or you took that third or fourth degree, took that BCL, took that medical degree, whatever it is, and the folks who you studied under said, well, we'll send you for these degrees, but anything else that comes after that, we can't guarantee it, or we just won't send you, which is their right. They don't have to do it. This allows you to remain active on the appellate scene. So how do you do that? You just pick two states per week, right? So maybe 1 week you're in Washington and Oregon, the next week you're in Louisiana and Texas, the next week you're in New York and Vermont. Pick your states, it doesn't matter. And you do two double-spaced, five-page appellate filings per week, right? You do that in a year, you get 104 briefs. You do that in 10 years, you get about 1,000. You do it over the course of 40 to 50 years, you get about 4,000 to 5,000, right? And remember that at most of these appellate boutiques, 300 filings is on the high side, right, for these partners, right? So you'd be a 26, 27, 28, 29, perhaps a 30-year-old with 100 filings, right? And that by itself, again, is very anomalous, right? So I was talking about bar admission numbers, right? Having 100 appellate filings as a 20-something-year-old, that itself is anomalous, right? That's a 1,000, that's a 10,000 on a scale of 1 to 10, right? And don't tell me that somebody with that many filings wouldn't be up for something, some sort of appellate gig or an SG position maybe in a small state eventually, right? It might work in a small state. It's probably not going to work in a big state. Texas, California, Florida, New York, etc., right? I mean, just you might need a clerk to be noticed there. But in a small state, it could probably work, right? It might. And yet another reason to be interested in this little scheme I'm laying out here. Well, why would you care about admission to Kansas, right? Well, admission to this state in a federal circuit court, right, automatically is going to give you admission to the appellate courts, right? So you're admitted in Kansas, and now you can get access to admission to the 10th Circuit, and now you can do these amicus filings that I'm talking about, not only in Kansas state courts, but you can go to these appellate courts, right? And if you can, it'll intervene if they'll take you. So it's a great deal. And, you know, I needed like an 8-minute trigger warning to set this out, but chances are that if I've attached this warning to the podcast, it's because the state I'm talking about is either chock full of proud Trump supporters, or it's because it's cold, or in a worst case scenario, it's cold and people are out in the cold because they want to attend a Trump rally, right? And that's just like the worst of both worlds. So that's why I need this trigger warning. Now for the actual episode. This episode of Corpus Juris will continue with our focus on Idaho appellate procedure. And here I'm going to be bunching two categories together. I'm going to be talking about appellate bonds very, very briefly, and then I'll be moving on to the record on appeal, right? And of course, when I'm talking about the record on appeal, regardless of what state I may be dealing with, it's probably going to be very extensive, right? Because the rules of these several states are usually very meticulous with this, with these kind of things. So what of the former topic? Well, under Idaho Rule of Appellate Procedure 16, cost bonds are not required on appeal. More than that, the party that benefits from a lower court or agency judgment can waive a supersedious bond requirement by agreeing in writing to forego judgment enforcement while the appeal is pending, right? So that's all I have to say on appellate bonds in the Idaho appellate courts. So what about the record on appeal, right? So this is something that's going to be more commonly encountered and probably of use to listeners. Well, counsel is entitled to receive an estimate from the court reporter and court clerk on transcript and record preparation costs within 2 days of the conclusion of the trial or proceeding, and counsel can also receive a documentary exhibit in criminal and post-conviction relief cases, right? Where do I get that? Take a look at Idaho Rule of Appellate Procedure 31B, as well as State against Adams. It's going to be one
15 Idaho cases 724. Citation is going to be from 1989 from the Idaho Court of Appeals. You can also take a look at Parker against Parker. It's going to be 97 Idaho cases 207, case from 1975. Where was I? If counsel does not receive an estimate, the presumption is that the transcript will cost $200 and the record will cost $100 until the reporter enters an estimate. By way of contrast, the court clerk will charge $1.25 for each page of the record and may levy additional charges to cover the record if the document costs cannot be covered with the per-page charge. This fee pays for physical copies of the clerk's record for both parties and delivery of an electronic copy to the state Supreme Court. Counsel can request additional physical copies of the clerk record from the clerk for 50 cents per page, and electronic copies can be requested for 60 cents per page. So that's the rate. The state administrative agencies have the right to charge different record fees that are not indexed to the per page charges set out above, right? And where do I get that? We'll take a look at Idaho Rule of Appellate Procedure 27. You can also take a look at State against Hardman. That's 121 Idaho Cases 873 from the Court of Appeals from 1992. You can take a look at Madsen against Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. That's going to be 114 Idaho Cases 624, case from the Court of Appeals from 1988. You can take a look at State against Harold. That's going to be 113 Idaho Cases 938, case from the Idaho Court of Appeals 1988. And you can take a look at Bernard against Roby. That's going to be 112 Idaho Cases 583, footnote 2. So not footnote 1, footnote 2, right, from case from the Idaho Court of Appeals from 1987. Where was I? The clerk and court reporter will provide a notice to the parties in the case once the record and transcript is lodged in the appellate court. Where do I get that? We'll take a look at Idaho Rule of Appellate Procedure 29. You can also take a look at Serrano against Four Seasons Framing. That's going to be 157 Idaho cases, case from page 309, case from 2014. You can take a look at Profits Plus Capital Management LLC against Podesta. That's going to be 156 Idaho cases 873, footnote 2, case from 2014. You can take a look at Rizzo against State Farm Insurance Corporation. That's going to be 155 Idaho cases 75, case from 2013. You can take a look at State against Morgan. That's going to be 153 Idaho cases 618, case from the Court of Appeals in 2012. You can look at State against Ray. That's going to be 139 Idaho cases 650, case from the Court of Appeals in 2004. You can take a look at State against Murphy. That's going to be 133 Idaho cases 489, case from the Court of Appeals from 1999. You can take a look at Lamar Corp. against City of Twin Falls. That's going to be 133 Idaho cases 36, case from 1999. You could also take a look at Collins against Collins. That's going to be 130 Idaho cases 705, case from the Court of Appeals 1997. You can take a look at McAlphin against Wood River Medical Center. That's 127 Idaho cases, page 1, case from 1996. You could take a look at Selkirk Priest Basin Association Incorporated against State Xrel Andrus. That's going to be 127 Idaho cases 239, footnote 4, not footnote 3, 2 or 1, but 4, case from 1995. You can take a look at State against Youngblood. That's going to be 117 Idaho cases 160, case from 1990. You could also take a look at Cosgrove By and Through Winfrey against Merrill Dow Farm Pharmaceutical Incorporation. It's going to be 117 Idaho cases 470, footnote 1. Case from 1989. But where was I? Once the record or transcript is delivered to the court, the parties have 28 days to request corrections and modifications. If the parties cannot agree to the correction or modification, as is the case in Texas, the Idaho Supreme Court will resolve the matter or refer the matter to the lower court or agency to hold a hearing to determine what, if any, modifications will be made after one of the parties files a motion, right? And where do I get that? Well, for the Idaho stuff, it's going to be Idaho Rule of Appellate Procedure 30.1. For the Texas citation, you'll have to stay tuned for the Texas portion of the podcast, which will come with a partisan trigger warning, but the weather down here, at the very least, is a tad bit nice. So why am I including a trigger warning for Texas? Well, I recognize that there are some listeners, perhaps you're a card-carrying Democrat, and you were born up north, and you went to school up north, and all you know is the snow, and you like the snow, and the idea I say that you view Texas the same way that I view Alaska. There are Trump supporters here, and the weather is suboptimal, so why is he talking about Texas? I personally don't feel that way about Texas. Weather's nice. People are great. But I recognize that this is a matter on which there can be a difference of opinion. But I'm digressing. And that concludes this first episode of, I think it might be two or three, on the record on appeal in the Idaho appellate courts. And remember, we also had some appellate bond stuff that was covered.